And I was like, I can come and tell you something, but I can't present the strategy because, as I already said, there is no strategy so far. Anyway, we thought we do this. I can tell you what happened so far, what is going on EU level, to maybe somehow later this year come to a strategy. And then the people invited Sarah from the environmental, from the European Environmental Bureau in Brussels. She's doing lobby work, but the good work.
Advocacy.
Right. You see, you have another name for it. She's working for an organization who's also involved in trying to convince the Commission to put some useful and really helpful things into the strategy. And she will probably tell you that it's really hard and we have no idea how successful it will be. Anyway, lots of props. People are still trying. So she will have the second part of the session. And then the third part, we thought about getting into a discussion maybe with you, because maybe you have some smart ideas and questions and feedback, of course, what we can do, because I can tell from Carola's team we are pretty frustrated and we have not much hope to do something within the parliament to kind of have influence on what is happening with this strategy. So we talked and we decided we have to try another approach, but I will come to that later. And yeah, when I start now with telling you something about the EU Water Resilience Strategy, as I already did, the spoiler is it still doesn't exist. It doesn't exist because work in Brussels is very frustrating, very slow. It's always lots of meetings with discussions, and they discuss ideas and plans and make promises. But before they finally get something, it takes some time. You all probably know there is already the Green Deal. And we know what is happening with the Green Deal at the moment. It's attacked. It's nothing what it was before and what it should be or could be. And now we have a kind of blue deal on the agenda, the so-called Water Resilience Strategy. The current status of this strategy is in preparation. The funny thing is it was announced in fall 2023, so 1.5 years ago. And I can read some of the official statements to kind of show you how frustrating it is sometimes to work in Brussels. And we often, sit in the office and are like, oh, anyway. So when they announced it, they said, in its State of the Union address and in its work program for 2024, the European Commission announced its intention to propose a non-legislative initiative on water resilience to ensure access to water for citizens, nature, and the economy while combating flood disasters and water shortages. So, what happened then? Well, one thing that even more slowed down this process were the farmers' protests, because people were afraid to get in touch with anything that was related to agriculture, because they had, the big machines in front of the parliament and streets full of shit and fire, and therefore they just skipped it from the agenda again and postponed it, let's say. But in October 2023, the environmental commissioner presented the main features of this initiative to the parliament. It was informal, and the complete text for this thing was expected in the first quarter of 2024. It didn't happen. Anyway, then they had a council on March 24. We had again another informal meeting, and the commissioner responsible for this water resilience strategy kind of was proposed her job. What should she do? And I can quote here the official document. The need to strengthen Europe's water security was highlighted in the political guidelines for the next European Commission, 2024 till 2029. Presented to the European Parliament by Ursula von der Leyen, President of the European Commission, elected for a second term. So after she was elected again, she kind of started it again and said, well, within the next period until 2029, we will present you a strategy on water. So this new strategy should address water efficiency, pollution, and water-related risks. It should also strengthen the innovative competitive advantage of the water sector and pursue a circular economy approach. And only this sentence shows you what got very clear within the last month. The focus on the European Commission and the European Parliament is economy. Of course, we are all not surprised because we are living in capitalism, but you can clearly see a shift even more towards competition, nationalism, and economy. And this is really something that doesn't help a strategy like that, as it doesn't help a Green Deal or anything related to nature protection or environment or climate. It's a disaster. And as you can see, just by this short, facts that I can present you so far, after 1 year, when they started in fall 2023, we are now in July 2024, there is still nothing concrete. There are no proposals, no nothing. There were just meetings, ideas, and promises, and a lot of paperwork, and that's it. And another thing that we have to keep in mind, this thing is called strategy. It's non-legislative. There are no laws, it's just a strategy. It's a paper with ideas. Some of the ideas might get into some legislative process sooner or later, but it's a strategy. So we can say, even after the last elections, what maybe sounded good in the beginning, a blue deal and a water resilience strategy, is just a declaration of intent and will definitely be disappointing. And working in the parliament, we of course have access to different documents. And I read the letter. It's really funny. It's a letter. They are called commission letters. And Ursula von der Leyen sends them to the different commissioners for the different resorts. And it really starts with dear and then the name. And then she writes a letter. And I read the letter that was sent to Commissioner Roswell. It's the one who is responsible for this. And this letter consists of 7 pages. And at page 5, finally, at page 5, the letter starts with your mission. And water is mentioned in 3 points, and I can read them to you to see how very concrete and very promising this is going to be. So it says, you, the commissioner, will lead the work on the European strategy to strengthen water security in Europe. This strategy will address water efficiency, water pollution, and water-related risks. It will aim to strengthen the competition in our water industry, develop clean technologies, adopt a circular economy approach, and include proposals for the digitalization of water management. So nothing about climate, nothing about less pollution. It's just about technology, competition and industry and innovations. So the second point where it mentions water is you will work to develop and deliver public and private investment in technology and cross-border water infrastructure. Okay, we have investment, we have capitalism, that's perfect. And the third point is you should also strengthen Europe's global leadership in the field of water, in particular by supporting global gateway projects to strengthen water infrastructure in partner countries. You will represent the EU at future United Nations water conferences and contribute to the G7 Coalition for Water. So as you see here, we have nothing concrete, and it's clear in all of the letters, as well in the letters that were sent to all the other commissioners. It's about competition, technology, and a very Eurocentric perspective. There is nothing about global justice or, you know, taking care of the water safety all around the globe. It's just about Europe. And another thing that really is obvious, it doesn't mention climate catastrophe itself, and it has no mentions of agriculture, chemicals, pesticides, or whatever. So since these letters were sent out, it was September in 2024, something happened. The Commission started a so-called feedback period, and that's where Sarah and her organization also got involved then. This period started on February the 4th and ended on March the 4th this year. And they called NGOs, environmental organizations, industry, governmental institutions. They were invited to submit their views about the problem, analysis and solution approaches, priorities, whatever. What those organizations from all kind of different directions think is important to include and to think about, to keep in mind if we talk about a EU water strategy. In total, they got 574 submissions, and now the Commission, I don't know how much care they take about it, but they are now being reviewed, analyzed, and maybe incorporated into a strategy. Adrian, the guy who works for Carola and is in Brussels, says probably they will ignore it. But anyway, along with this call, the Commission published three reports, and the conclusions of these reports, I will read it out to you, they are really devastating. They say, as discussions on how to make Europe more climate and water resilient, the European Commission has published a series of reports on the implementation of the so-called Water Framework Directive, the Floods Directive, and the Marine Strategy Framework, which show that member states have failed to protect citizens from the effects of droughts, floods, and sea level rise, and to ensure sufficient quantities of good quality water. So that was not very successful. And the reports show that while the framework, the Water Framework Directive, has improved the understanding that we have a problem in Europe's water bodies, the progress is being slowed down by underestimating the main pressures and the effort required to bring all water bodies in the EU to an healthy state is failed as well. So we don't do enough and we are too late. There are, I don't know, seven or eight points that outline this, but it would take too much to read them all, but it's very frustrating. So we kind of, the only success these reports see is that we grow understanding that we have a problem with water. But that's it. But at least they realize that the processes are slowed down. That's at least a thing. I mean, they are not surprised, but they at least mention it and address it. These processes are slowed down and are not... There would be solutions, there have been discussions, but they are just not implemented. So what is happening now? The Commission is busy with these 475 or four reports to read, to do something with them. And then they said for the second quarter of this year, so now between April, May and June, they want to adopt a strategy. So this sounds, we are almost there and it might be very interesting. Anyway, so we have to wait what they come up with. And the thing is, the parliament itself doesn't have, I think, lots of trust in the commission, because the European Parliament now decided we are going to do our own report. And we submit our own report to the Commission, so they have 575 things to read and hope they might incorporate it somehow. And this report is done now. It has 13 pages. You can download it. And there isn't much hope that the Commission will, I don't know, really do something with it. Because this is also just a list of demands and wishes to the Commission, just developed in the so-called ENVI, in the Environmental Committee of the European Parliament. And they also worked the same way as the Commission does. They ask NGOs for feedback, they ask nature conservation organizations for feedback, and they wrote this report and submitted to the Commission. And that's what is the current status. The Commission is sitting somewhere with more than 500 reports. There are probably pretty good reports with pretty good ideas and demands what should be included into a strategy, because they come from NGOs and environmental organizations. But I'm pretty sure most of these reports coming from industry and from national agencies, and they go into a completely different direction. They focus on, as we said, technology, they focus in investment, they focus in growth, and they focus in the country they are located in. That's also very obvious. We have a very nationalistic view within all the organizations at the moment of the European Parliament. And this also got worse now after the last election, because everybody is looking, what can I do? What have I to do for my country? And I joined in the first ENVI meeting on this water resilience strategy, and it was a nightmare. There were scientists and people from different countries of the EU, and they all were talking about, well, in my country we have this and that problem, and my country wants to do this. One country wants to build more walls and dams to just keep the water inside, and the next one says, well, we have to kind of make sure we can buy enough water from other countries, so at least we are fine. But nobody was talking about the quality of the water, or about what do we do in Europe. Not even, I don't even want to mention the world, to kind of take care of water. Nobody wanted to touch the agricultural industry. Nobody wants to touch chemical industry. Nobody wants to touch capitalism. So they are just like, what can I do to make sure my people, and another scary thing is they are not even talking about the people in the first place, sondern but what can I do to protect our economy and to strengthen our economy and then our people and forget about the rest? And if we don't even can work it out within Europe, we don't even have to think about something like climate justice or a global approach. So, as I said, we are very frustrated with it, and we don't see lots of options on behalf of Carola or the left or the Greens, just because of the majority in the Commission and the Parliament, to really have an impact on what is going to end up in the strategy. And we were sitting together and talking about what can we do now to maybe at least do something and not let them get away with it completely. And as sad as it is, the only thing we can do is try to inform people, civil society, NGOs and movements. And that's why a conference like this and the idea to start some kind of water movement is so important, because that's where we have to create pressure. Even if we have a mandate and are inside the European Parliament, we can't do anything at the moment. We can have speeches, we can write papers and pass them on, but we have no impact on what they are going to do with it and what is coming out of it. So we have the option to try to get as much information out of the Parliament on the streets and help to support civil society, different groups and organizations, to enable them to even protest. Because if you have no idea what's going on and what they talk about behind closed doors and when they are going to decide about whatever, you don't even have the option to be there in front of the door and protest. So this is what Carola tries during her mandate at all, not only if you're talking about water, but with all the other issues that are important and are related to climate and nature and social justice. Get the information as soon as possible, get them out, spread them, and find the connections to the relevant movements who are working to these different issues, to support them, to protest, and to at least try something and create pressure on the street. And of course, also to find a way to collaborate with NGOs, maybe highlight their reports, try to create some public attention, press appearance, and whatever. And as sad as it is, to say it as a member of the European Parliament, that's all we can do at the moment, because the situation is as terrible as everybody thinks, and it's very frustrating to sit there and only can think about, okay, what can we do outside and how can we get as much out of this mandate, even if we have not a single chance to have an impact inside the parliament. And that's very frustrating. Anyway, that was what I can tell you about the still non-existing water resilience strategy. And I will pass on to Sarah, because she can show you how the NGOs try to work. She will present the report of her group, of her organization, so that you get an idea how these reports look that are submitted to the commission. And we all just can cross fingers it somehow gets through and will have any impact.
Well, I think I can also just maybe talk over my slides. You won't see my PowerPoints.
Oh, there it is.
Okay. So I'm Sara Johansson. I work at the European Environmental Bureau. We are an organization, we're a network of 185 environmental civil society organizations across 40 countries. So I assume most of you are from Germany. So among our German members, we have Grüne Liga. I saw some of their nice work in the lobby, but we also have BND, for example. So, and as an organization, we work on a really broad set of topics, spanning from pollution, chemicals, climate change, energy, but also the economic transition, to some extent also global policies. I work in the nature team, so we work on biodiversity, water and soil protection, and yeah, I guess I think you did a great introduction. I mean, but I think also if you work in Brussels, I think, yeah, it's it can be, sometimes be frustrating, but I think it's also, yeah, we try to also not be overcome by that, because then it's just too grim. So, and I started at EEB in 2020, so it was Green Deal galore, and I didn't come from the EU policy background, so I thought that was the normal. It took me a while to understand it is not. and as Cindy said, we're now in a very different political climate, both the European Parliament after the elections is a much more conservative and even far-right composition. And the narrative and the focus of the European Commission has also shifted from sort of the Green Deal that very much came from the climate protests, very, very much. Then now we had the farmers in the street, and now it's, as you said, it's all about competitiveness, simplification, and now also defense, military defense, and maybe less thinking about what we're actually trying to defend. So I will tell you a bit our views on water resilience, but I just wanted to say a few words about my background to sort of link up to this. I come from the far north of Sweden. So for us, we're a very fast warming part of the world. I realized in my 20s that I'm actually from the Arctic, because we're within the Arctic Circle. There's nothing that we thought of a lot when I was growing up, but the Arctic is very quickly warming. And although I get shocked when I hear about extreme temperatures in Southern Europe, for me, what really scares me is that I hear it was plus degrees in the town of Jokkmokk in February, where it's normally minus 30, minus 40. So 6 degrees can also be an alarming temperature, extreme, I would even say. But we also see the direct impacts on local communities. We're also a region that is now in the focus of mining interests. So we are also at the heart of the so-called green transition. And what I see in local communities, one of the big things people worry about is water quality and the impacts of mining on water. And I think that is also something that I will come back to in our comments. So, yeah, just as the backdrop, I mean, I will just see that it's my first slide, yeah. So I think we're all aware about the increasing climate disasters that are also very much felt through the water cycle. They are not only multiplying, they're also intensifying. And they are costing us a lot. In 2023, the EU Climate Service, Copernicus, estimated that water and climate-related disaster cost the EU 3.4 billion and cost us also in terms of human lives. Of course, we are also having in recent memory the devastating floods in Spain, but also in Central Europe in the autumn. And last year, the European Environmental Agency, so the EEA, came with their first climate risk assessment, and it showed that very clearly that Europe is not prepared. Our policies and adaptation actions are not keeping up with the growing risks that threaten all of our society, infrastructure, but also our ecosystems, the economy again, but also food and water supply. So we're not prepared. And yeah, I think this conference is really great because it really connects the climate and the water crisis because they are really intertwined. We know that climate change is very much felt through the water cycle. We get more intense and frequent extreme phenomena due to rising sea and air temperatures. But we also know that the extreme heat waves that are hitting us are also driven, of course, by climate change. But what is also important to bear in mind is that the effects of these extreme weather events are also the result on how we manage land and water. Unfortunately, we have not done so well in this regard. Cindy already mentioned. We've had the main EU water law, the Water Framework Directive, in place for a quarter of a century. It was adopted in the year 2000. But we've had some progress, but still less than half of Europe's water bodies, which include surface, groundwater, and coastal waters, are in good health. They are overexploited, they are degraded, they are polluted, and that's why they can no longer provide the services, including flood and drought mitigation that healthy ecosystems can do. We have been, for centuries, draining our landscape, mainly for agriculture. I like to give the example of Flanders. As I'm myself based in Brussels, we're known for being a country with a lot of rain, but Flanders has also, has over the past decade lost 80% of its wet areas. So a lot of the rain that falls goes straight out to the North Sea through these very efficient drainage systems. So Flanders is actually one of the regions in Europe with less available water per capita. But at the same time, land management, occupation of flood plains, compactation of soils, hard surfaces for cities, doesn't leave the water room to escape and increases the risk for flood damage. And finally, water pollution is significant and I would say rising and also underestimated. I think it's very intuitive that, you know, if there is no water, like during a drought, we don't have water. But I think people are less aware, as well as policymakers, the link between pollution and water availability. Our members in Spain did a report showing that over 220,000 people in Spain can't drink their water from the tap because of unsafe levels of nitrate from agriculture. So that is a bit of a nightmare scenario. You know that the Iberian Peninsula have gone through a prolonged drought, and to have water but not being able to drink it is really something that we need to avoid. And this is just one example, but you know, PFAS is already everywhere, and it's coming with extreme costs. In Sweden, Sweden is one of the countries that have put in place health-based limits for PFAS in drinking water. And in the city of Uppsala, where there is a lot of PFAS in the water coming from the military training ground, they need to treat it. And the water bills rose by 30% in the beginning of the year, because to treat PFAS is really costly. Most member states have not put in place health-based limits for PFAS in drinking water, and the EU-wide thresholds for PFAS, the member states have to comply by 2026. So this is a looming cost for society that's going to be huge. But as I said, we already have a lot of examples where water is not available due to pollution. In France, in Belgium, elsewhere, we already have groundwater sources that are so polluted with, coming pesticides, nitrate from agriculture, that you're either, it leaves the water operators with three options. You can dilute down to legal thresholds, but that means that you need fresh water, unpolluted fresh water. Or you can treat it, comes at a cost, it's also energy intense and you need resources. But we also already have many cases where drinking water abstraction points are simply abandoned because they are so polluted. So basically, that's not very resilient. So for us, our key point is that water comes from nature. If we speak about drinking water, we speak about water for agriculture, water for industry, it all comes from nature. And we need to protect the ecosystems that provide water, but also that protects us from floods and droughts. So that's why we try and press that nature protection and working with nature to store more water in the landscape it needs to be at the heart of the strategy. I try to sum it up and I will go through these points. Now I lost already track of time. But I've summed it up and I wanted to go through them. Someone has to shout when I'm too long. So the first one is a full delivery of the Green Deal. We have slowed down considerably, and there are also still missing actions from the Commission. But this links very much to the need to tackle the triple planetary crisis in a holistic way. And also, which links very much to the need to streamline water protection in policies that regulate agriculture, industry, etc., especially and agriculture here is really important due to the fact that agriculture takes up so much land, and we need more land to give more space to water, and that is where it gets politically very difficult. We need to, because as part of this consultation for the water resilience strategy, it was actually done in two parallel consultations that fed into the same. It's about the water resilience strategy, but there was a specific consultation on the so-called water efficiency first principle. And of course, we should use water efficiently. There is no need to waste water. But actually what matters for ecosystems is the total amount of water you take out. So even if you have a lot of very efficient industry or very efficient irrigation systems for agriculture, it's the total abstraction that matters. I will come back to that a bit later, but we do see a lot of focus on efficiency and also on so-called new sources of water, like wastewater reuse, desalination. But those strategies can only be successful if they're coupled with demand side policies. And actually, we know the water resilience strategy is not going to solve everything, and it doesn't have to, because actually so much can actually be done if we would just implement existing environmental laws, including the Water Framework Directive. But we know this is not done. These reports and from the Commission and also from the European Environmental Agency, they show very clearly that member states are not on track to deliver on their legal obligations to bring Europe's water to good status. This should have been done by 2015, so we're now running quite a lot on overtime. And that's where we want the Commission to act. The European Commission is supposed to be the guardian of the treaties, so they should make sure that EU laws are followed. But many times we see that member states, they get away with breaching the law. So we want to see much stricter enforcement action from the Commission. And the final point is on also sort of an enabler. Everybody wants more water, but everybody also wants more money. So it's every sector. Member states want more money because they're hit by these droughts and floods, and it's hugely costly. So they want more money to sort of do damage control and emergency responses. Of course, the agricultural sector, they want more money to invest in more efficient irrigation, and the list goes on. We think more public money should be spent on nature restoration. We would like to see a dedicated nature restoration fund in the next EU budget. But at the same time, we really need to think of where money is spent today, not least the biggest spending point of the EU, which is the common agricultural policy. We know that money is often going to harmful activities, so it's we have both policies but also financial instruments that go counter water protection goals. So that's definitely not efficient. We also know that member states, they cite when they have to respond to the Commission why they haven't managed to bring Europe's waters to good status. The most commonly cited reason is that they didn't have enough money. At the same time, we know that they don't make full use of the economic instruments that are offered by the Water Framework Directive, so which can be related to setting prices for water, including for industry and the agricultural sector. We know that often the most the biggest water users and also polluting industry, they often benefit from low or even non-existing water fees. But at the same time, the member states sort of play the victim. They say they don't have money, but at the same time, they don't ask for the money that they have a legal right to do. But again, that is in order to protect certain economic interests. So, there is a lot that can be done by just reshuffling the money that is sort of in the system to make sure that it goes to water protection measures and that we have a better and more fair approach that sort of reflects the polluter pays principle that's actually inscribed in the EU treaties, but that's often not well reflected. How?
We have to 5:30.
We have till 5:30. I can speak a few more minutes.
Yes.
Okay. Well, basically, the next slides are a bit just going more into detail, but I'll say a few words about each one. But I also want to really then go into the discussion. But on the Green Deal, we know that healthy ecosystems provide us with clean and sufficient water, but they can also mitigate the effects of floods and droughts. But I think a big threat that we see is that this we have a lot of focus. I mean, we know we need to act on the climate crisis. We need to cut emissions. But there are a lot of projects, green industrial projects, like mining for critical raw materials, hydrogen production, data centers. I saw Tesla activists here. They have huge impacts on water quality and quantity. So this is really a challenge, I think, I would say, for the European Commission to make sure that its own strategies are coherent and that they don't throw biodiversity, pollution, biodiversity protection, water protection, and pollution prevention objectives under the bus to go sort of carbon neutral. But that is definitely a huge threat. We're waiting now in March to see which will be the mining projects that are on the critical, under the Critical Raw Materials Act that are considered as strategic projects, because they will get fast track procedures, and you know, it's definitely going to have huge impacts on water. Hydropower is another example. I mean, it's we need to increase renewables, but hydropower is definitely a huge threat to rivers. On repeating old mistakes. So what we see as another issue is that, as I said, everybody sees, you know, you can't ignore a flood, you can't ignore drought, it's there. But often the response from governments is very much, oh, climate change disaster happened, we need to give money to the farmers that were impacted, we need to help people rebuild their homes. But it's kind of maintaining the status quo and continuing business as usual rather than rethinking and what actually were the root causes of the disaster. We see a lot of reconstruction of homes in flood risk areas that just further expose people to risk. As I said, we see support to farmers, but not to for them to transition to more sustainable agriculture, but just to sort of support them financially when they have been struck by drought. And again, also what we hear very much from the parliament and but also from national level, a lot of investment in dams, reservoirs. I listened to the discussions around the Mega Bassin in France, and other sort of ways to sort of magically create more water. But that is also a huge risk for so-called stranded assets. Because we know that just because you construct a reservoir doesn't mean that you will have water inside of it, but you might end up with a lot of money spent on grey infrastructure and no water. So that is why we think nature-based solutions are both more resilient. They are often the more cost-efficient alternative, and they are, you know, you can move around. It's not like when you have built a huge dam, because that's really something that is supposed to be there for the next decades. Avoiding maladaptation. And something on the demand. I think I said a bit about this, but we see a very narrow view on water efficiency, and that it very much goes to also support investments in efficient agriculture, etc., but very little about discussing the demand side and also not questioning what water is used for. And I think, this maybe goes more into the opportunities discussion, but when we have more pressure on water, it really leads to discussions on how we use water and what we use it for. Again, coming back to agriculture, we know that meat production is highly inefficient in terms of resource use. It's highly also dependent on import. We're importing fertilizers. We've, I think, sent €1 billion to Russia in the past year just to buy fertilizer. So I think, widening the discussion around efficiency and policies that cap water use to sustainable levels that allow enough water for ecosystems, but also policies that really lead to a more truly more efficient water use. As I said, implementation is lacking. I think I said this one. I speed up a bit. And on the harmful subsidies, I think I mentioned this as well. And I put here some of the work. I mean, we started working on this topic, also part of a broader coalition of other NGOs, including WWF, Wetlands International. So we started back in 2023 when this was first on the agenda, and we have continued. But basically, the key message is to restore and protect Europe's ecosystems. And with that, I think we can move over to the discussion, unless there are any direct questions.